From Cap Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. $5.36. That's what a gallon of regular gas costs on average in California, the highest in the country. And if that feels unusually high, it might be because prices have been on a steep upward trajectory in recent weeks and spiked even more following the start of the Iran war. A month ago, that same gas was 82 cents less per gallon. There are a confluence of factors driving up this demand. There's the expected spring break travel. That means more drivers are hitting the road. But the unpredictable Iran war has driven up crude oil prices past $100 a barrel, and that trickles down to what we pay at the pump. In a moment, we'll take a look at the state of California's refineries. The Golden State is a top 10 oil producer in the country, but has scaled back considerably in recent decades. But first, I want to welcome Doug Johnson with AAA Northern California. They track gas prices and travel trends. Welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me, Vicky.
Okay, so just a quick reminder, why is California's gas so expensive compared to all of the other states?
You know, we have stricter regulations. I think about 45% of what you're paying at the pump is local, state, and federal taxes and fees, depending on where you're filling up. And then we also have, again, stricter regulations than you do even on the federal level, so that you're, again, getting cleaner burning gasoline than you are in some of the other states. But again, it adds up.
Yeah, I mean, looking at the national average, and this is according to AAA's website, the national average right now is $3.59. So we are considerably higher at $5.36 a gallon. So how much has California's gas prices changed over just the last week or so since the start of the Iran war?
Well, in the past week, we've gone up about 55 cents. But in the past month, we are paying 82 cents higher. Of course, yeah, some of that is the seasonal shift. We're going from the winter blend, which is cheaper to produce, to the summer blend that has more additives, that it burns cleaner in the summer months. But it is mainly the conflict in Iraq that is sending prices shooting up. I'm sorry, in Iran. Excuse me. And of course, like you mentioned, a lot of the refineries that are shutting down, Benicia's Valero is set to shut down in April. We're hearing rumors it may have already slowed down production. And that's roughly 12% of the state's current gasoline production capacity. So you can imagine that's not helping things.
Yeah, I mean, that is a significant hit. When we're talking about the average price of gas, I mean, average is average, so it can be higher than what we just laid out. Are there parts of the state that are more expensive, where it's more expensive to buy gas?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a lot of it's supply and demand. Where there's people, there's going to be more demand and prices are going to be higher. It's in San Francisco today, it's $5.63. In Sacramento, it's $5.33. And then if you go down to Modesto, it's $5.23. So you definitely should pay attention. Download the AAA app. We're tracking gas prices across the state, county to county. If you're taking a spring break trip and you're driving from, let's say, Sacramento, you're going to Disneyland, probably smart to fill up in Modesto, Bakersfield. It's going to be cheaper than it is in Anaheim.
Yeah, that's such a good point. I mean, I love traveling Highway 395, and Bridgeport is like usually one of like the highest prices of gas in the state. And we always remember that. So you try to fill up beforehand.
And that's a lack of competition. Of course, gas stations, they set their own prices. So when there's no one else in town, they can set whatever price they want.
Yeah, that's such a good point. Taking a look back in recent years, I mean, you also mentioned we're in spring break. You know, the sun's out, temperatures are warming, more people are going to be hitting the road. What would have been the price now? I mean, is it just the war in Iran, or would price have just gone up anyways this time of year?
They certainly would have gone up. We don't want to say that they wouldn't, but I think it wouldn't have been as significant. I mean, 55 cents in a week is pretty steep hike, 82 cents in a month. They would have gone up, you know, a nickel a week or a dime a week, and it definitely would have gotten more to the high in the summer. But, you know, right before the Iran conflict started, we were reporting the gas prices were actually cheaper this time this year than they were this time last year. That all changed once the conflict started, of course. So it would have been higher, obviously, but it wouldn't have been this high.
You mentioned that the winter blend is cheaper to produce. What is the special sauce in a summer blend?
Additives, you know, and it makes it cleaner to burn. It goes from April 1st is the day all gas stations in California have to be selling that summer blend all the way until Halloween. So November 1, we go back to the winter blend, but it usually starts to shift for the summer blend late February into March. That's what we're seeing right now.
You mentioned in the past week or so, we've had a steep increase in gas prices in California. Are you able to track or gauge what the future of gas prices in the state could look like?
Again, at AAA, we don't. We don't predict the future. And if you look back 2 weeks ago, our gas report, it was saying that it was cheaper this year than this time last year. But again, it's not just regular gasoline going up. Diesel is actually jumping up even higher. It's $1.17 higher this time than it was this time last month. So you can imagine all that trucking, all the shipping, that cost is going up as well.
Yeah, I mean, you also track travel trends. You have AAA members, of course. I mean, with the increase in gas prices, do you know if your members are changing spring break travel or even summer travel plans?
I think spring break, a lot of people have already bought their plane tickets. They've already made their plans for flying. Obviously, for driving, they might be rethinking some of those trips, might be picking shorter destinations that aren't as far. But this could have an impact on summer travel. But, you know, that's why we encourage people to go into one of our AAA branches, talk to a travel advisor. You can find some really good deals. You can find the best deals that way. But it's going to probably have an impact on summer travel.
Finally, Doug, what advice do you have for those who've already booked international travel?
You know, it is an interesting time with everything going on. So definitely sign up for the State Department's alert systems for whatever country you're going to. It's called STEP. You can find that online. And then you can get alerts for international travel for the countries you're going to, especially, you know, places like Mexico. If you're going overseas, you do want to know what's going on in each country and get alerts for it.
Doug, as always, thanks for joining us.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Doug Johnson is with AAA Northern California, breaking down current gas prices in California, which have spiked to $5.36 for a gallon of regular. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. Now I want to bring in Severin Bornstein from the Energy Institute at UC Berkeley's Haas School of Business. Welcome back.
Nice to be with you.
Okay, so when we're at the gas station, what are the factors that determine what we're paying per gallon? What do you hope people better understand?
Well, crude oil is a major factor, and the price of crude oil translates directly into the price of gasoline. And the relationship's pretty clear. Every $1 per barrel increase in the price of crude oil increases the price at the pump about 2.5 cents a gallon. Just to put that in context, since the beginning of the war, as of a couple of hours ago at least, the price of crude oil was up about $30 to $35 per barrel, and that translates to 75 to 80 cents a gallon. We haven't actually quite seen that much of an increase yet, so we may, if the price of crude oil holds at that level, we may see a bit more driven by those higher prices of crude.
And to help offset those rising prices, I mean, you mentioned crude oil has surpassed $100 a barrel. I mean, the United States announced, and this is according to AAA, they're going to release 172 million barrels of oil from its reserves. And this is part of this broader effort by the International Energy Agency to release hundreds of millions of barrels of oil. It's called the largest emergency release in its history. Given that you follow this so closely, how significant is this solution for the long term?
Well, it's not viable for the long term because there just isn't enough in inventory. And even in the short term, it's not going to replace what's actually going on. So just to put this in context, the blockade of the Strait of Hormuz is taking about 20 million barrels a day off the market. The fastest release we can realistically expect from the U.S. component of this oil release is probably 2 million barrels a day. And the rest from Europe and other parts is probably another 2 or 3 million barrels a day. So a really optimistic view is maybe it could replace a quarter of the oil that has been taken off the market. But ultimately, we can't just take it all out of inventory. Ultimately, more oil has to be produced. And if we do start taking out 5 million barrels a day, in the fairly near future, these countries are going to get nervous about running their inventories down and are going to start ramping that down. So it will help. It probably has driven the price of oil down a bit while other factors have been driving it up. It's not a long-run solution, and it was never going to completely offset what we've seen happen with this real highly unusual, some people say unprecedented, blockade of the Strait of Hormuz. Mm.
Well, let's focus on production a little bit. I mean, California may not be associated with oil wells like Texas, but the state is a top 10 oil producer in the country. I mean, how much oil does California produce? Does that put the state in a better position?
It does not put the state in a better position. California produces about a quarter of the oil that we refine, a quarter to a third. And it really doesn't matter when it comes to the price at the pump, because there is a world integrated oil market. And the oil companies, by the way, are the first ones to say this. When the price of oil goes sky high and gas prices go sky high, they are the first ones to say, look, we don't set the price of oil. That's set in the world market. And they're absolutely right. That is true. So when the price of oil out of the Middle East or oil from Venezuela or from Mexico or many other sources goes up, the price of oil from California and Texas go up too. And if you look at the data on what they're quoting, they've all moved up. They charge the market price just as you do when you sell your house. You don't say, well, I bought it for this much and I need a 5% return per year, so I'll sell it for this. That you go out and you look at the market and you decide what the market price is. That's what oil producers do. We should consider producing oil in California to the extent that it's economic, particularly after you've accounted for all of the environmental issues associated with it. But we should not do it thinking, oh, this is somehow going to protect us from high prices at the pump. It doesn't.
Okay. Yeah. I don't think a lot of people wanted to hear that. Yeah, it can be an unsatisfying answer because a lot of people rely on gas. I mean, and not you could even drive an electric vehicle, but you are impacted by gas prices. What are the ways that the increase of this cost could just ripple out throughout the state's economy, especially, I mean, affordability remains such a big concern right now.
Yeah. So, you know, we've seen a big increase in income inequality in the United States over the last decade. And that means that some people are doing just fine and paying an extra $20 or $30 a week at the pump is not going to be a noticeable change in their standard of living. And other people are commuting long distances, really struggling to make ends meet. And it's a huge hit to those people. So I recognize that. But we have tried intervening in the oil and gasoline markets in the past, and it has gone really badly. In the 70s, we tried regulating the price of gasoline. It was not the Arab oil embargo that caused those gas lines. It was the fact that the price of oil went up due to the Arab oil embargo, and we didn't let the price of gasoline go up. And so refiners had much less incentive to produce. As a result, we got less gasoline than people wanted. That didn't happen in 1991 with the first Gulf War. That didn't happen in 2006 with the run-up of crude oil prices. It didn't happen in 2014. Didn't happen in 2022. And that's because when the price of oil went up, the price of gasoline was allowed to rise with it, recognizing we don't control the world price of oil. Now, if we are willing to accept that, we will still have high gas prices, but at least we won't have something that people hate even more than high gas prices, which is sitting in line for an hour or two in order to buy gasoline. And I still remember that from my youth, being told by my parents to here are the keys, go sit in line and fill up the tank.
The record high average price in California for a gallon of regular unleaded is back in like 2022. So really not that long ago, it was $6.43 a gallon. Do you think we may flirt with that at some point this year, that price?
Yeah, there are two pieces to that that we have to take apart. One is the price of crude oil. And right now, the price of crude oil would have to go up another $40 a barrel or so to get us there, which is possible, but that's not the most likely outcome at this point. The other is that unfortunately, all of this is happening at the same time that California has a separate problem that is uniquely California, and that is we're losing a couple of refineries and we are going to be relying more on imports. Nothing wrong with that in itself. There are many states that don't even have refineries and import all their gasoline, but we have to make sure we have the facilities to actually manage those imports. That means making sure we have the port space and the companies that own it actually make it available, because they are owned, many of those ports are owned by refiners, the pipeline and the storage capacity. That is, I think, a bigger concern for the possibility of huge price spikes right now. Because we're going through this transition. We lost one refinery last year. We're in the process of shutting down the Benicia refinery right now. And that does make us more vulnerable to these price spikes. That demands good California policy, because that piece of it, unlike the crude oil piece, we can actually do something about. And I'm hoping that the state is getting out ahead of this. Well, I wouldn't say ahead of it at this point, catching up with it, because we should have been getting out ahead of it a few years ago, because we are going to lose refineries. You know, when we decided to move to electric vehicles, everyone understood the demand for gasoline is going to go down. When the demand for gasoline goes down, refineries are going to have less product, less demand to sell, and some of them will shut down. And that's just the reality, and we can manage that, but we do have to be thoughtful about it.
Yeah, those two refineries that you're talking about, Phillips 66 in Los Angeles already closed. The Valero facility in Benicia is set to close next month. Combined, they make up about 17% of the state's total capacity. And a UC Davis study said prices could rise by like $1.21 by August of this year if no significant changes are made to the market. Now, in response, Governor Gavin Newsom said earlier this year that the Benicia refinery would still continue importing gas into Northern California, even after it fully shuts down. So there's that piece there in terms of a hopeful solution. Is that an effective, sustainable strategy to keep stable prices?
It is eventually, but it's not enough to just have the Benicia refinery using its port capacity to bring in gasoline, because we have to be able to store a lot more gasoline, and we don't have all the storage capacity we need. Luckily, we don't need as much crude oil storage capacity because we aren't refining as much. So a lot of people are talking about converting the crude storage capacity to gasoline storage capacity. That's completely doable, but we have to make sure it actually gets done, and local permitting issues and so forth don't slow it down, because if we do, we could end up with the ability to bring in gasoline, but the way gasoline comes in is in these tankers that hold 40 million gallons. You got to put all that somewhere, and we have to make sure we have the storage capacity to do that.
Another development on the horizon is with the Air Resources Board in our state, because they are expected to consider changing the state's cap and trade program, and they may make that decision in May. So that's not that far away. That could set more aggressive limits on emissions. And Chevron spoke to a local outlet here, KCRA, and Chevron told, you know, at KCRA that the vote could be a final straw that collapses the oil and gas industry. Of course, that's just one perspective. And I see you smiling. So if you can expand upon that, what do you think?
Well, the oil industry has, you know, been telling us this story for years that, you know, everything will fall apart if we have a cap and trade program. When gasoline first went under the cap and trade program in 2015, the highest cap or ceiling on the price of the cap and trade allowances would translate to about 75 cents at the pump. So the oil industry came out with an ad campaign saying, this is going to raise your price to 75 cents at the pump. And it didn't. The best estimate was it would raise it about 12 cents, and it did. So yes, it would increase, what the CARB is talking about would increase the price of gasoline. How much exactly it would increase it, it depends on how you model out these tighter standards, but probably the best guess is something like 25 cents a gallon. Not nothing. People will notice it. So far, the market for the CARB allowances hasn't actually incorporated that. So traders don't seem to think that will happen. Either they don't think CARB will actually follow through, or they don't think it will have that big an effect on the price of the allowances. This is part of phasing out gasoline. And it's part of paying for our carbon emissions, because the carbon emissions are real and they are causing climate change. People don't like it. And I would say three things about that. One is shop around. California not only has very high gas prices, it also has much greater gas price dispersion across stations than the rest of the country. If you drive around a city outside California, you might see a 10 cent or maybe a 20 cent variation in the price of gasoline. You don't see a 50 or 80 cent difference from a few blocks, as I see all the time in the Bay Area. People just don't shop around as much here, and you can get a much better deal. Not only do you save money, but also you put more pressure on the high price sellers. Mm-hmm. Second thing is, if you buy a more fuel efficient car, even if you're not going to an EV, if you buy a more fuel efficient car, that's like cutting the price of gasoline. So if you get a car that gets 30 miles to the gallon instead of 20 miles to the gallon, that is like a 33% cut in the price of gasoline. So people don't really often think through the full cost to them of owning a car, including buying the gasoline. And I encourage them to. And then, of course, if you get an electric vehicle, there's a whole different set of problems that our electricity prices are too high. But it does protect you from the gyrations in the gasoline price. As much as we have seen variation in electricity prices, they don't gyrate nearly as much as gasoline prices do.
Mm-hmm. But what if you live in an area, I mean, you've joined us about this before, about the grid, and you have like public safety, like power shutoffs, you know, because of high wind events, and obviously weather can knock out power. We've been going through this for recent years, so people have had to deal with that. I mean, how best do you navigate that with an electric vehicle?
Yeah, a couple things on that. First of all, public safety power shutoffs really left people scarred from 2018 and 2019 when we had a lot of them. They haven't completely disappeared if you're in a rural area, but they, if you look at the chart of how many people are affected, it's just down more than 90% from 2018 and 2019. That's not ruling them out. We are getting some of these very short-term 20-minute shutoffs when there is actually a short on the line because there's a new technology that automatically shuts a line off before it can start a fire. And it can sometimes take 20 minutes or an hour to restart it. You know, if you have an electric vehicle, the thing to do is charge when it's cheap and don't wait once it's cheap. So get your car charged and have it ready. Particularly, and you know, there are many worrisome things about the climate change, but those high wind events are pretty predictable. We pretty much know when they're coming a day or two in advance, and the utilities warn us about it and so forth. So get your car charged when that happens and make sure it's fully charged. By the way, once you do that, many of the EVs have electric outlets in them that you can run your refrigerator off of. So the one of the first things we worry about, of course, when we lose power is everything in the fridge is going to warm up and be spoiled. And you can, with most EVs, you can avoid that. You can also do that, by the way, with standard internal combustion engines if you buy what's called an inverter that you hook up to your battery. You have to be comfortable with what's the equivalent of jump-starting a car. It's that much technology. But you can then run your refrigerator off your battery for a while.
Yeah, it's like a generator. Finally, we only have a few seconds left, but I do want to ask you this because we talked about it on the show yesterday, and this is the gas tax. And there is a bill that wants to restudy alternatives to the gas tax because as there are more electric vehicles, people scale back from gas. That actually leads to less funding and revenue for road maintenance and repairs across the state, and it impacts rural communities. That seems like a weak point as we scale back from gasoline and rely more on electricity. How do we find, I guess, a sustainable way forward for something like this?
Yeah, I'm always torn on whether this is a feature or a bug. So gas taxes are incredibly regressive. They hit low-income people much harder than they hit average customers and wealthy people. So in some ways, I'd rather finance roads and bridges and infrastructure through a different tax that wealthy people pay is proportionally as much or more than poor people. Gas tax isn't that. So in that sense, I'd be happy with phasing out the gas tax and switching to something else. But we have to be willing to switch to something else. Unfortunately, the legislature seems to think, oh, those taxes are fine because they're not what the stuff we run, particularly income and sales taxes, which are most closely associated with the legislature. And they're very hesitant to replace other taxes with income and sales taxes. And this comes up in electricity all the time. When I point out all the things they're paying for through electricity taxes, essentially by raising the price of electricity, and they say it's not realistic to raise income taxes, to which I say, we're already raising taxes, we're raising electricity taxes, and electricity taxes are just as regressive as gas taxes. And so I think we really need to get to a more viable solution where we are raising the funds we need, obviously having as efficient a government as possible, but raising the funds that we need through a tax that is equitable and doesn't just hit poor people in a way that in many cases is sort of hidden and people are less likely to complain about.
Severin Bornstein is with the Energy Institute at UC Berkeley's Haas School of Business. As always, thank you for joining us.
Thanks. Nice to be with you.
You're listening to Insight on CAP Radio. I'm Vicki Gonzalez.